morning, everybody. Thank you for joining Henry and myself for another segment on Nevada Backcountry. Today's topic will be ATV and UTV use in Nevada's open country.
This is going to be a good one, David. It's another issue that gets people hot under the collar. I'm a big proponent of ATVs and UTVs, especially as you get up in age. I think it helps get game out of the field quickly. I would add a caveat to that, that I think they spook game. We've all been there when you are out in the middle of nowhere and you'll be hiking out and come across truck tire tracks, a vehicle you never heard, versus we've heard ATVs, UTVs, side-by-sides as they're called, from just miles and miles away. I think the animals hear that stuff too. But again, I am a proponent of the safe, smart use of ATVs and UTVs in the outdoors. You know a little more about the regulations, rules, stuff to keep people on the up and up while they're out there recreating using these tools.
Yeah, so there's a few things that people have posted with like most frequent questions.
Okay.
And some real simple ones. Like people have asked, do you need a driver's license to operate an ATV? And that's no. Do you need any type of special accessories? Do you need to wear the seatbelt that's provided in an ATV or UTV? The answer is no. Also, do you have to take a safety course in the state of Nevada to operate an ATV? No. And is there an age requirement to operate an ATV or UTV? And that one is yes. 16 years old. You have to be 16 years old to operate one on your own.
Okay, so if a dad's riding on back and a son or daughter is sitting in front of them driving and they are under the age of 16, that's okay or?
No,
not at all.
If you have an ATV, is not authorized to be a two-person machine unless it's designated as one. So you have certain machines out there that are like ATV-wise. You'll have your driver on the front, and then you'll have a pedestal area where a person can sit and have their arms there.
Yeah.
Those are authorized for two people, but your standard ATV is not a two-person ride. There's using like emblems on the seat that has two people on it with a cross through it.
I've seen that before.
Yeah. That's illegal. So there's some really common questions or frequently asked questions when it comes to ATV and UTV use in the state of Nevada. Now, there are some really fine print type of regulations about using an ATV on like highways. When you mention the word highway, people think, oh yeah, that's just that the asphalt roads. That's actually a maintained road. If it is a maintained road by the county or the state or the federal government, like we have BLM maintained roads, that is actually considered under the definition of a highway. In theory or in regulation, you are not allowed to drive on that with an ATV. Another one is, do you have to wear a helmet when you operate one of these? And it's in the state of Nevada, and it's no.
Okay, so I'll use a personal example. Hunting an area that isn't a day trip away and preseason scouting, ripping around, pulling game cam cards, stuff like that. 100% disclosure here, I never wear a helmet. I've usually got a pack on. I'm running around to whatever game cams I've got set up and I'm checking those. Or if the season is coming up, I'm pulling them. I'm okay doing that without a helmet.
Yeah, I'm guilty of it as well. I have never worn a helmet using the ATV or my UTV.
Okay.
I just have not. Luckily, my UTV's got the full enclosure, the doors, and, you know, I'm older, so I get some of the luxuries.
My dad's got one of those. Absolutely love that thing, especially when it's snowing or raining.
Exactly. It's nice to jump in that thing and be like, oh,
I'm out of the elements.
I'm out of the elements, and it's warm. But, you know, there are some restrictions. So with Nevada follows some of the federal regulations. When you harvest an animal, the animal's down on the ground, you can take the ATV or UTV up to 1 mile off of a designated road.
I think that's a crucial point. So a road could just be an established two-track through the desert. If you have an animal down, you can take that ATV or side-by-side up to 1 mile off of that two-track road.
Yes. Yeah, a designated road.
Not for glassing, though.
No. So that is where the confusion happens. You cannot do it to say, oh, look, guys, I want to get to the top of this ridge. I don't feel like hiking it. Let's just stick these machines in low and just crush brush and work our way up this mountain with the machines. That'll get you in trouble. The only time you can take it off a designated road is to retrieve your downed animal.
Okay, I've done that in the past. I'll be 100% honest. I thought we might be bending some rules. So if you get an animal down, you can go up to 1 mile off of an established road. You're not breaking any laws. I think that's probably one of the biggest misconceptions out there.
Yeah.
Is that you got to stay on that two track. Again, if you're looking for animals, you're just glassing, scouting, you do need to stay to established roads in these wild places in Nevada. However, once the hunt is complete, you got an animal down, you can go retrieve it.
And one, except for in wilderness, you can obviously. The wilderness regulations are the wilderness regulations. No motorized vehicles, no track vehicles, no electric. Nothing. It's boot leather, horses, and mules. I mean, that's
sweat
the
and regret.
Exactly. So now, with that said, ATVs and UTVs have been around for over a decade now, and there are some conservation organizations that are now suing states for these particular regulations. Some states only allow you to go a half a mile off of a designated road. So when you're out and about and you're putting in for tags in other states, you need to make sure you know what their ATV and UTV regulations are, because some of them vary. But these conservation groups are now suing the states because they have been collecting this data for a decade plus, up to two decades, showing, from what they're stating, it is showing that individuals that are going off of the designated roads, creating a track through the brush by crushing the brush or creating two track in a sense, then Joe Schmo and Sally Smith show up and they're like, hey, check that out, man, there's a road there. And then they take it, and then people after them take it. And so next thing you know, you've got 15, 20 people have now taken this road that some individual used to retrieve their animal. Now you have a designated road that goes up to a mile into a location. And then the piggyback on that is, and now that becomes the designated road, and it's a mile off that road. And then it's a mile off the next road. So before you know it, and they've written papers on this, and they've collected decades of data on this from trails all across the Western United States that were back in the 80s and 90s from BLM and Forest Service roadmaps for backcountry stuff, showing all those designated roads at that particular time, and then showing what things are now. They're showing that these extensions that started out to be a mile can be up to 20, 25 mile additions further into backcountry and basically spiderwebbing the mountains. From the report, they have connected it to habitat damage and wildlife damage.
Oh, absolutely agreed. Like I said earlier, these things do impact animals. I've seen it with antelope before. You know, a rancher's truck, a pickup truck, will come by checking a water source, checking on cattle, and the antelope don't give it a second thought. They've seen that vehicle a million times. And then you go ripping down there on an ATV or a side-by-side, those antelope will be a county over. That high pitch, however you want to describe it, sound that they make absolutely does impact animals. And again, I don't want anybody to misconstrue this as I'm anti-ATV, anti-UTV. I use both while hunting. I just think there's a smart way to do it.
Well, there's a respectful way to do it.
Better put.
Get yourself to a location. Understand where you're hunting. Look at the maps. There are so many mapping programs out there. You've got Onyx Hunt. You've got Go Hunt. You've got so many things that show you three-dimensional mapping on your phone. You know what the other side of that mountain looks like. Be respectful of the habitat that you cherish so much, that you love to get into on an annual basis to hunt and to recreate. Don't go crashing through it because you think you can.
On the complete flip side of the motorized coin, coming up after the break, we'll get into a brief fitness segment. So if you are in that crowd that doesn't use an ATV or UTV and won't use an ATV or UTV, we've got some fitness tips for you to stay fit in the off season. Stay tuned on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. thanks for sticking with us through the break. This segment, like I alluded to at the end of the last one, we're going to get into some physical fitness stuff, tips and tricks for the off season. Personally, I put a lot of hard miles on my body. I don't like gyms. I do most of my workouts outside, but I've gotten into a routine where I pretty much just live in a pack year round, whether that's backpacking in the summer with my kids or on a weekly basis walking my dog. I've got some great mountains right out my back door. I go up a mountain, I pick up a heavy rock, I come back to my house with that rock. At the end of it, I hate myself, but I stay in pretty good shape year round so that hunting season doesn't come. Suddenly I find myself with 80 pound quarter on my back and now I've got to get it out of a canyon. David, you're more of a gym guy. Yes. However, you work out 5 days a week.
Yep.
Why don't you give us some tips, functional fitness stuff that people can be doing in the gym to stay in shape year round?
I prefer the gym because it is a routine for me. I go there at 5:30 in the morning, every morning, and just it's set in stone for me. So it's my routine. I do during the off season or during the summer seasons, I love to cycle. I love to trail run. I love to do some of my workouts outside because heck, man, it's so nice out. Why go sit in the gym?
Leading an active lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah. Like not quite like you. You're doing like the Rocky 3 or 4, you know, Rocky Balboa at the farmhouse type of workouts when he's fighting the Russian guy.
Pick up heavy things, carry them.
Yeah. Carry them. Your wife's like, what are you doing?
I get some looks in the morning in my neighborhood for sure.
Going back to the gym. So my big advice for individuals that are starting out at the gym, haven't been there for a while, or just first time deciding I'm going to start hitting a gym, I'm going to start working out. Biggest piece of advice I can give you, you need to know your body's thresholds. And once you kind of have a feeling of what those thresholds are, back it off 2 more notches. You don't want to get hurt. It's
not worth it.
It is so not worth it. I've had some injuries from the gym myself. You know, at my age, it takes quite a while to recover. I've ripped my abs wide open once, and that was 8 months that I wasn't able to hit the gym, and it destroyed me.
I've broken a foot right before chukker season. It cost myself a chukker season.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's
so you just
got
to take it easy. Yeah, you just got to take it easy. Remember to warm up. And while you're doing these workouts, in some of the things I've read about and working out, it's roughly 77% of men, their primary focus is chest and arms.
Well, how are you going to impress the deer to death? Riddle me this.
You know, like you need to have a well-rounded workout. You have to work on warming your muscles up, stretching. So there's a lot of really low impact twisting workouts where you can pick something up and you just rotate your torso, light weights or with no weights. And as you start feeling a lot more comfortable with those and your muscles aren't aching or it doesn't feel weird when you twist or turn or bend or squat, then you can start elevating your workouts to add weights or increase the intensities by doing it for longer periods of time.
The rotation thing, I'm glad you said that. I'm a big fan of those types of workouts. I think a lot of times we get stuck in that two-plane thing, either pushing or pulling. And I've never found myself in a perfectly flat level position on a mountain with a deer down trying to put a pack on.
Exactly.
So I do that a lot. Pick up a sandbag, put it on the bed of my truck, pick it back up, rotate around, put it on the other side of me on the bed of the truck. I think that rotational thing doesn't get enough credit. The big thing too is lower body, that focus on, okay, I'm going to have to go up mountains, usually with a pack on.
Yes.
And for people just easing into this, you know, walk your dog, mow your lawn, get used to moving on foot, and then start adding maybe a little bit of weight with a weighted vest or a pack or something. I think that is an incredible exercise and all too often gets overlooked for the, you know, the bench press, the bicep curl, that kind of thing.
Right.
I've never bench pressed a deer onto my back, but that lower body,
usually you're in an odd position when you are picking that animal up. You're thinking you're doing a simple curl, but your torso is twisted. You know,
yes.
Some really good ones are what's called like the suitcase lift. You just bend your torso to the left or right with no weight or a light weight. You're working your obliques.
Right.
So those things, all of that. And you just got, when you're doing and designing a workout, it's very beneficial if you have it being from head to toe, an even keel workout from head to toe, working your neck muscles, working your back, your shoulders, your arms, your abs, your chest, your lower back, your quads, your calves, you know, doing calf raises, things like that. Because when you're hiking the mountains, the amount of stress that's on your quads and your calves is pretty significant, especially when you're cruising around with a 40, 50-pound pack on. And going up some of these mountains is not exactly the easiest thing. The last thing you want to do is be halfway up this mountain and feel your calf blow out because you haven't worked it out.
You haven't stretched it.
You haven't trained it. You haven't done anything. But you can curl 80 pounds, 90 pounds. That's fantastic when you're laying on the ground.
This isn't an old military thing, but I remember doing a functional fitness seminar with a trainer, and one of his points was you have to carry the engine. His point being for mountain fitness, you know, you should look at maybe losing some weight, being lighter framed. It's less weight overall you have to carry. There is a point of diminishing returns. Yeah, sure, you'll get stronger doing these gym workouts nonstop, but you will pack on a significant amount of weight if you're doing it the right way.
Correct.
And that weight might hurt you in the mountains.
Well, and you're going to burn a lot more fat doing weight type of workouts compared to hardcore cardio. Cardio is going to trim you down. You're not going to have the muscle mass that maybe you're expecting. So it depends on what you're looking for. What are you wanting in the end result?
And for me, that's I want to go 7, 8 days, 9, 10 days living out of a backpack, carrying that, going up and down mountains, and then potentially, ideally, having to pack an animal out. Yeah. So that's kind of where my frame of reference comes from. That's what I tailor my fitness goals around.
Right. And on that point, so when I've talked to folks about designing workouts for them, I've always asked them to take a couple days, write down what you do on a daily basis. What type of activities do you do that represent some type of a physical fitness activity? If you're dragging things, if you work in a warehouse and you're always bending over and picking things up and rotating, figure out what is going on in your daily life, how it marries or how it dovetails a potential workout or a workout activity. From there, you can then start designing a workout that will benefit them on a daily basis based on the type of activities they do.
Right.
So that's one of my things I always ask people to do for like 2 or 3 or 4 days, write it down, bring it to us, sit down, and then we can start developing the type of workout from that and then finding out what exactly are their end results. Or do they just want to be straight up, I just want heart healthy. I get that quite a bit. I just want to have my blood numbers, you know, my tests, my blood tests come back without red flags.
I want to lead a more active, healthier lifestyle.
Correct. Exactly. And that's the big one that I generally get is I just want to live a good, healthy lifestyle.
You can take it too far, but I think almost universally, everybody, fitness instructors, everybody recommends just get started.
That's it.
Do something. Motion is lotion. If you've got sore joints, a sore back, you will benefit from just leading an active lifestyle. Now, for those people that maybe they've got a couple years of fitness behind them, there are incredible programs out there tailored for backcountry hunting.
Yeah.
Personally, I can't speak highly enough of the Mountain Tough program. I've done their heavy pack programs. I've done their body weight programs, their kettlebell program.
Yeah.
It is a bulletproofing your body for backcountry hunting program. There is a fee involved in it. So, you know, it's that kind of next level beyond just an active lifestyle. But there are guides out there. So you don't have to completely come up with this stuff on your own.
And realistically, the fee is about what most people do in a week at a coffee shop.
Absolutely agreed.
Just figure out where you can figure what's more important to you. So the program's fantastic. I've done some of the workouts in it. They are very rewarding. They're very strenuous.
Yes.
On some of them, some of the more advanced ones, they'll put you in your place. You feel good though. One thing when you are first starting out, your best step for success is to start out with a routine. And now I'm talking about I'm not talking about a workout routine, but the routine in which you either, if you decide that you're going to do the gym, that you set a time that you go to the gym every day. Once you start getting that routine set into your calendar, every week it becomes easier and easier and easier to keep it going.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Take some time. Go refill your coffee. Coming up after the break, we're going to be having a interview with Jim Irwin of Performance Shooting Institute. You don't want to miss it.
And now, everyone, welcome to the show. Former member of the Joint Special Operations Command's Premier Counterterrorism Unit, shooter extraordinaire, all-around good dude, and a friend of mine, Jim Irwin. Jim, welcome to Nevada Backcountry. Let me ask you, how many push-ups you think I can do?
Oh, geez, I'd say just enough to cover whatever you got to cover.
Wrong. The answer's three. Three, Jim.
Three? Total of three. Hey, well, we could probably bump those numbers.
So all that out of the way, talk to me a little bit about the Shooting Performance Institute that you run down there in Gardnerville.
So years ago, again, my background being Army Special Operations and then getting into some contract work after that, you know, traveling the world and basically carrying a gun professionally last 30 years, started getting asked, like, suggestions on the range when I was out shooting, and hey, can I get a tip on this, and I'm gonna get a tip on that, and then started to find that I had a knack to teaching and explaining things in such a way that people retained it. And fast forward, you know, 10-15 years down the road, about what, 2016, I think I really started leaning forward on teaching more and then refining my my syllabuses, my craft, if you will. And it's really taken off, and my wife and I decided to really make a go of it this last 5 or 6 years here, leaning forward on, like, pistol fundamentals and long-range precision. I was a sniper half my career in the military, and just have a love for that long-range game. And we started saying, well, let's take what I've learned in the military and let's apply it to hunting, right? And how can we, you know, cross that divide of using, like, a tactical type mindset to approach hunting? And it really is the same thing, right? So we started taking all that and some of the new technology, scopes, reticles, bullet calibers, and putting it into what we call the intro to long range as it applies to hunting as our intro class 2 days. And it's just taken root. We've had guys come and take the class 3 and 4 times because they feel there's so much information. They just keep learning a little bit more every time they do it. And then they can pick pieces of that to really dive into, whether it's scope theory and use of reticles or pushing distance or wind calling. So it's just really like, here's how we really put the puzzle all together. And then you can make that puzzle even more complicated, diving down each of those little avenues, if you will.
Now, I would draw an analogy. Both David and I shoot tournament archery. And our point, our whole point with that is become a better bow hunter. So the more times you do things in practice, the more you get that dialed, the more successful you are in the field. So I would draw the analogy that long range shooting, you know, if you can ring steel at 1,200 all day, then a 350-yard shot at an animal, in theory, should be much easier.
Correct. But there's a lot that goes into it, which what fascinates me, right? It's all these fundamentals, these mechanics of how we apply it. So if you look at the fundamentals of shooting, whether it be pistol or long range, it's like, well, that's simple. You know, stance, grip, or body position, this, that. But then you start chasing the rabbit down into each hole, like in ballistics. You know, they're talking internal, external ballistics, how much kinetic energy transfer at that distance on the animal, shot placement. What position are you shooting from? I can shoot pretty dang far and know I'm going to hit if I'm prone, no stress, you know, everything's perfect. But now put that in a hunting situation and I'm climbing up a mountain, I'm winded, and I'm going to get a shot off a set of sticks. 350 yards could be a seriously long shot, given the situation and in the environment, right? So the beauty of our class is, like, we set you up for success knowing that you have a constant in your gun, your scope, your data, so that the variable becomes really you in the environment. And then how do we best approach that side of the puzzle to create a higher probability of first round hit, right? So it's really setting the foundation so you can minimize variables on the mountain or on the plains or wherever you might be hunting.
Did you grow up hunting? You grew up down the Mammoth Lakes area, right?
Yeah, so kind of funny story on that is I didn't necessarily grow up hunting. My dad was a hippie and my mom was a wildlife biologist, and they kind of frowned on it.
Okay.
I didn't kind of go out and do it on my own. It's like, hey man, we don't do that. Well, I kind of do. I'd, you know, hunt yotes and rabbits and stuff like that, but big game, I really didn't hunt until after my military career.
Question, do you get into the specific, the bullet loads and stuff and how that, you know, how those specific loads are beneficial in certain circumstances?
Not in the intro to long range class, because there's just so much information on that. That would turn into an entire 1 to 2 day reloading course.
Oh, okay.
That we could potentially see down the future. But do we bring that up and say, hey, these are things to consider when we're talking consistency, right? Standard deviation. Meaning from shot to shot, what are the muzzle velocities? How close are they? And that can be based off of, you know, neck tension on that bullet. If the bullet seated correctly, is there any yaw in it? So you're getting flap as you fire the round.
Yeah.
So, like, there's all these little pieces of the puzzle. Are you putting it up into the landing groove, running it long, or is it a little shorter? Like, there's all these variables that go into that, and what bullet weights or grains, like certain barrel lengths and barrel twists. It's fascinating how much you can change a grouping just on those little pieces of the puzzle. So we'll talk to guys, especially when we start to zero them. And I say, for example, it's a 300 Win Mag with a 185 grain bullet or a 200 grain or a 230 grain and different manufacturers. And it's like, you can bring 385 grain bullet from different manufacturers and they'll all group differently.
Right.
And then you'll find what that gun likes. So it's kind of geeky stuff like that we'll get into a little bit, but more of these are things to consider. Otherwise, it'd be a 5, 6, 7 day course if we went down the rabbit hole on all of it.
Gotcha.
You know, and we'd be like, I'd be back in Army sniper school.
It's really similar to a lot of our archery conversations when you are trying to shoot precision.
Well, when we apply it to hunting, it's not so much the precision of it until we start explaining why we want that precision. You know, why are you missing and why do we want precision?
Got it.
And the beauty of our class is, like, bring what you got. You don't need a $10,000 rifle to do this, right?
Yeah.
So when I start the class, we talk about managing expectations of yourself and your equipment. You can bring an old, your grandpa's 270, and I'm going to show you what you can do with it. And you probably killed 100 animals with it in the last 40 years, but at what distance and how accurate were you, right?
Right.
How many shots did it take? So when we start showing that the more accurate you can be and the better the shot placement, the less potential for miss, especially if you start adding variables like shooting position, elevated heart rate, buck fever, whatever it might be, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, yes, very much so. So we talk about that where you went, yeah, your old Vance 270 was great, and you killed a bunch of animals, but after 300 and it groups 10, 12 inches,
that's
not acceptable, right? When we're talking 100 yards, our rifles, we expect a half minute or better grouping, meaning a half inch to quarter inch grouping. You know, that's how tight I want my shots at 100 yards.
Yeah.
And we have a couple rifles that'll group 2 inches at 1,000 yards. There's no variable there.
Yeah.
I know the gun is dialed in and I'm the variable, so
right.
I've just managed the expectation of one piece of that puzzle. The gun's locked in. It's good.
Yeah.
And that's what we want to demonstrate when we come into these courses, is like, bring what you got, man. I'm going to show you what you can do with it.
Okay.
You have a 600-yard shot, and I just showed you that gun's basically maxing out of 400, about 400. Like, you need to get closer, guys.
Yeah.
So you don't wing a shot, hurt an animal, miss an epic animal because you didn't know that piece of the puzzle and it cost you the hunt.
What's a caliber or calibers that you're currently shooting, and what do you guys kind of recommend for people attending the course?
We do 30 cal and under. So, you know, we don't really do anything with 50 cal, 408 Chi-Tac, you know, 375, you know, Chi-Tac, the bigger bore guns, like, bring your hunting rifle. So we run anything from 6mm arc up to 338 Lapuas. We really like the 300 PRCs, the 300 Normas, phenomenal rounds, great ballistics that will put down about anything in North America you want to hunt. When you get on the other end, I've got a 28 Nosler that I built a mountain gun, which is basically like a 7mm mag. You want to get down a little bit less recoil, 6.5 Creeds or 6.5 PRCs are outstanding, and we've hunted elk with those. Mrs. dropped her elk at about 475 one round with a 6.5 PRC, so people think that 143 grain bullet's not going to do the work. But I also like said, well, let's look at it this way, especially in archery, right? That's not a big, fast moving piece of kit, right? It's not coming in and looking for kinetic energy transfer. It's where you put the shot. So if I've got a gun that I can laser beam where I want it to be, hit where it's supposed to hit, and I can manage recoil really well, see the shot impact, have a quick follow-up shot, that's advantageous. Elk are pretty durable animals, man. Even with the bigger calibers, sometimes you got to put more in them, but you got to be able to see where you're hit. So we really run a lot of different stuff. There's no one-and-done gun, and so we really encourage people to bring what you got. We're going to show you what you can do with it, but also expose you to some of the other calibers, brands, carbon fiber barrel-type setup, chassis-type guns that you may not be familiar with, to kind of open up your field of view, if I guess you could call it, to say, wow, okay, there's other stuff out there besides this.
Yeah, every time you open up your truck, I start drooling. On that note, let's take a quick break. Coming up after the break on Nevada Backcountry, we'll get into part two of our interview with Jim Irwin. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Challenge course that's coming up in May, I believe.
Yeah, so through these classes, me and my instructors started screwing around and putting stuff out at different distances, and then we actually started playing with some archery targets, some 3D archery targets. I'm like, hey, I got an idea. Why don't we put like four of these out here at different, we got to shoot different positions, challenge ourselves, and we came up with the idea, let's do this Hunter's Challenge, right? So it's four stages, 32 rounds total. We're getting a lot of major sponsors in it, and it's bring what you hunt with, your backpack, binos, rangefinder, shooting sticks, you know, the rifle you prefer to hunt with. And there's four stages, and each one's a little bit different type scenarios, but we're using 3D type archery targets that were hanging steel over the vitals. So the cool thing is it's hit or miss, right? You're under time. You get 8 minutes per stage. So you got eight shots per stage, 8 minutes to do it in. So move into your position, find and range your animals, and then engage. So we have like some 3D stuff, and then we have life-size prints on vinyl or cardboard. So it looks like a real animal out there. And then we cut out the vitals and hang steel behind it. You hit steel, it's a hit. If you don't, it's a miss. So it's hits in time, and then different shooting positions, different distances, unknown. You range them, you call your wind, and you give it your best shot.
So
and
you have to do that, or is it like a spotter shooter scenario, or just singleton the whole time?
It's a single person engagement, so we don't have a team event yet, which is a good idea with spotter shooters. So you're finding your animal, you know, or your target, you range it. It's not, you know, grossly difficult. We're not trying to hide them from you. We want you to engage, you know, and have fun, not spend 8 minutes looking for it.
Right.
But instead of just steel hanging out there, we've tried to make it more real, like we've got a bison, an elk, or a bear. Last year we had these meerkats that were pretty cool for the harder shots. They're like 3 feet tall, pretty skinny. They're looking for those instead of just a piece of steel sitting out in the bushes.
And what kind of you guys are out on a ranch or a farm out in Smith Valley? What kind of landscape out there? Do you have high angle stuff?
Not necessarily. That's a whole nother conversation. We get into high angle and what distances and angles actually define high angle shooting. Which you do run into in our environment when you get up into some of our mountains, you know, hunt elk and stuff. But it's basically desert sagebrush laid out, no real crazy angles or anything. But the shots are, so I'll put it this way, there's 32 targets and the winning hits last year was 21 hits. So it's still challenging, right? It's not just a bunch of gimme stuff, because we're going to make you shoot from different positions that you may or may not have shot from before and create difficulty through that and then calling your wins.
What's the biggest mistake you see out there on the course?
The biggest mistake we typically see is not using what you have to engage with. So if I put you in a position that you can't just lay on the ground with bipods, how do you get in a position to build stability? So we get a lot of misses based off of that, or not using, just using your kit and your assets to build a stable shooting positions, and they let the time kind of freak them out, because you only got 8 minutes for eight shots. But that's actually quite a long time once you figure how long it really takes to engage, once you got everything laid out. So they'll start to haul ass instead of taking a little more time to get the shots. That makes sense. Key is getting the hit. And then if you and I tied, time would come into it. But if you did the whole course in 32 minutes and I did it in an hour, but I got one more hit than you, I win.
Gotcha.
So time starts messing with people.
Do you put any physical restraints in the program, like make them run five wind sprints so their heart's elevated and they're a little bit winded, and then it's like, okay, now?
We haven't yet, because we have come into the last two times is some physical limitations of some of the hunters.
Oh, okay. Right?
They're like, hey, they, you know, maybe they've got, you know, a bad knee, or they're a little more, maybe an old timer that's coming out. So we haven't put in that. One of my very first ideas literally was that. On our first stage, you're going to start like 200 yards out and you're going to move to this rock outcrop and then find your stuff. Well, if you got 40 people doing that, you're going to run out of time. Like, you don't have enough time in the day to create that. However, gotcha. We could do it probably in a more reduced capacity of like, hey, you got to do three push-ups.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, for you.
Yeah. For Henry, we'll have to do three push-ups. We might have to help him on the third.
Speaking of physical limitations.
Squats and then get on the gun or something.
Yeah.
So this is the third time we're doing it, and we keep tweaking it a little more each time to create fun shoot, but an attainable shoot. And right now our goal is to try to get the first place hits up to closer to 30 instead of 21, right? So make the course challenging, but not a gimme, but not, I think right now how we have it set up is even a little, it's a little too hard even already. So this year we're going to have a couple buddies come out and we'll set it and they're going to shoot it instead of me and my instructor shooting it and going, okay, we got 30 out of 32 or 31 out of 32 hits. It's good. Gotcha. Well, not everybody does this for a living.
Right.
We haven't pushed the envelope on the physical side yet because the hit factor to me was surprisingly low. So obviously we're making it hard enough, or even too hard in my opinion right now, with target placement and positions that we require to shoot from. Now put on elevated heart rates and stuff, we'd have to make something a little more easy, I think. But then we got the guy that's like, hey, I thought it was supposed to be a long range hunter's challenge. I'm like, no, it was a hunter's challenge.
Right.
But why don't you have them out further? I'm like, because nobody's hit it.
Right.
Year one, we had one. Just at 600, nobody hit it. So, like, I could throw one out there, but why?
Yeah, what's the point?
Like, scores up a little higher. Yeah, what's the point at that point? Just to wing a shot or two? But what we're finding is good feedback on Manly. Had a great time. We put up the class on the website, and we already have, like, 20 people signed up. And I bet at least half of those are guys that did it last year that, like, I've got to be able to do better than I did last year. So now it's like this personal challenge to come out and perform better than they did before. Like, man, I didn't know I sucked so bad on this. And now they're working on that, so which is great. Right? That's what we want, right?
Yeah.
Or they're taking a class with me now on here's how we do this and why we set things up the way we do to increase that probability of first round hit. So we're having a lot of fun with it. And all the shooters so far have had a great time with it in the last 2 years. And they've not said, like, well, you need to do this, short of the one guy saying, hey, why don't you put one way out there? Well, nobody hits that. It was overall, it was a great experience. We feed you. And then the really cool thing is we have our prize table with some amazing sponsors. So whether you finish first or last, you're getting something off the prize table. First place last year was a $2,000 Seekins hunting rifle. And then Proof Research had certificates for carbon fiber barrels that run about $1,000 a piece. So our prize table is basically from like $2,000 down to, you know, just cool gift packets of this, or discounts off of Scopes and Loophole and 511 and Cryptic Outdoor, Wiley X, bunch of different sponsors, a bunch of different cool stuff on the table. So no matter how you do, you get to go to the table, but in the order you place, everybody leaves with something and a full belly with a fun lunch.
Yeah, nice. Very cool, Jim. Nice. Hey, you brought up the website. You want to go ahead and give the website for people listening so they know where to go and how to sign up?
So it's shootingperformanceinstitute.com, and then you can go under training, and you'll see all the different training we offer on there, whether it's pistol course, rifle course, the Hunter's Challenge, CCWs, everything's on there. We got some products on there, so if you need to plus up on something prior to the challenge, you can check out and see if we got something on there you're after, and we'll get you taken care of.
Very cool, man. Cool. Now, I want to put you on the spot real quick. What units do you like in Nevada? Let's go mule deer.
Mule deer, I think 01, 3, 01, 4, 01, 5 is a lot of fun. Up there, what is it, north, right against the Sheldons there in Oregon?
Yeah.
And the beauty, there's like a personal reason for that, is one of my close friends actually took me on my first mule deer hunt up in 013. I got a 5-point up there, beautiful muley, and I shot it with the rifle that I met my wife over. So
you met her over it? Was there like a debate or a battle on who was going to get it, like at a dinner or something?
No. I was actually coming into town. I was living in Idaho, and I was coming down to help on an elk hunt with my dad, one of his buddies. And I was like, well, I'm not going in the mountains without a rifle. So I shipped it to a friend of mine down there with his FFL. Well, he happened to be a veterinarian who had an FFL, so I shipped it to him, and I went into the vet clinic to pick it up, and my now wife was his vet tech, and so I'm geeking out on my rifle, and it was a, you know, kind of a custom build from Southward Defense. It was a 308 AR platform, actually. So I'm like, yeah, everything's cool. She's like, well, I like hunting. I like guns, doing stuff like that. I'm like, ah, cool, and I left.
Smooth, goes, man. Jim, you are smooth.
Right? That was so clueless. Oh, that smooth. That was so clueless.
Yeah.
But I get a text like an hour and a half later, like, hey, jackass, she was hitting on you. You need to take her out to dinner. She loves to hunt, go take her out shooting and everything.
Yeah.
And it was like, are you serious? I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
So it was over. Yeah, so it was over that rifle. And got back from that hunt, and we've been together ever since.
Okay. Yeah, so what about elk units in Nevada? Where do you like?
Oh, I would probably go into Jarvage for elk.
Okay.
What's that? 07173.
Yeah, the sevens.
Sevens. That's a sweet spot. You can get some monsters up there. Unfortunately, I keep getting skunked on elk tags, so I don't have a lot of knowledge. I hear the rubies are pretty sweet, but it's hard to get into with a lot of private land around there.
Yeah,
right.
It is. It's tough.
Jim, anything that we forgot to ask you? Anything you want to hit on?
No, man. I think we covered it. Like I said, the website's a big one. You know, give us a follow on Instagram. You know, Jim the Kraken One and Huntress Divine is the wife. We put up a lot of content on there, or upcoming courses, or, you know, gear we're digging.
All right.
So any of that stuff. And like I said, we're local. I got a pretty killer background that really applies to a lot of stuff we do around here. And I'd love to help more people and help them become better shooters. And hopefully that helps them become better hunters.
Sincere thanks to Jim for joining us on this Sunday's episode. Stay tuned after the break. Tom Gresham's Gun Talk coming up at 11 on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk.